a freaking bear.
It definitely was. I found it in the car, hidden in a shoe.
Welcome to episode 9 of Double Dodge. This one's called The Quickening. And on this episode, we have Pash Kornienko, all the way from Scotland, talking about contenders for Worlds at SteamCon. And we're also in the car for a new player carball. We headed out to Group North for a Rookie League event, and we figured that would be a good opportunity to talk about strategy relevant to new players or people who are getting into the game and have a few games under their belt. And that was prompted by a question put on the forum from Camuffins.
That could be said the wrong way, couldn't it? Fantastic. No, I think it's a good episode. We chatted to the Pash Monster, and he's always good for a chat. I'd like to get into a bit of the Worlds talk, and got some interesting insight into us all guessing as to who might be the out-and-out winner of the inaugural Worlds.
Yeah, and I think he like everybody else who's a Guild Ball fanatic, is pretty excited, given that it's effectively Guild Ball Christmas next week, as he put.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, man, a lot going on. Season 3, massive tournament, the opportunity to watch some top-notch players play at the highest level. Man, what isn't happening at this point?
Exactly. Well, we're not, Western countries aren't voting, retarded people in as president this week. So, at least that's not happened this week. So.
No orange sexual predators being elected to high office, as far as we know.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So we should probably give a shout-out to our sponsor, Big Daz, from NerdvarnaGamesSA.com. We saw him on the weekend, and as part of that Rookie League, he made available many wondrous prizes for all who participated. So, once again, generous dude, big supporter of the community, and if you can jump on there and buy your Guild Ball crack from him, that would be great.
Yeah, it makes us look good. I mean, it was like one of those clown kind of games at the show. Everyone wins a prize. Everyone got a prize, and it was a shitload better than the plastic crap that they give you at the show. So,
what did you pick up, Cam?
I got a Pin Vice, actually, which I'm pumped about because I'm all in exploring the NGs Season 3. So I'm actually itching because I know very little about them, but we've all seen Ratchet. So I'm super keen for that ranged game, a bit of knockdown action. I reckon NGs are going to get pretty strong. So, how about yourself?
I got a limited edition Tater, which means that I'm probably going to have to get Farmer's Guild now.
Daryl knows you, man. He made that happen deliberately, didn't he?
Yeah. He knows. He's like one of those drug dealers that gives you a free taste to start off with, and then once you're hooked, you're hooked.
Yeah. You're stuffed now, mate.
I am. So, what do you reckon? Are we going to do Carball first this time around, and then
Absolutely. I think chronologically that's how it kind of happens. So let's do that.
All right. So we shall jump into it and see you on the other side. In the car.
Carball.
All right.
Far out. So what are we today? It's Saturday here in Adelaide.
It's a glorious Saturday.
It is a great day to be inside, actually, not at all. It's a 27-degree day. It's beautiful. And we're heading out to Group North. They've got our good mate Daz from Nerdvana Games. It's got a little tourney/rookie league. Bit of an exhibition day, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah. A good opportunity to grow the community, go out, play some games in a friendly atmosphere.
Yes.
Nobody getting their egos bruised too much.
No, I'm sure some egos will be bruised,
Yeah.
But he's got a few little target things you have to do throughout the day. Pretty much if you just play a game and do a few of the interactions, then you'll do it. Obviously for the older players, things like teamwork, momentous plays, doing stuff with your mascot, blah, blah, blah. But it's a way to engage the newer players, from what I hear.
Yeah, so I have no idea what to expect, really. I'm just rocking up to play some games.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's a great setup they've got up there. So, we'll have a bunch of tables. I'm sure it's basically trying to lure a lot of the Group North guys in to just test the game out as well. I get the suspicion that's the motivation for the day, basically. So, yeah, no, it'll be good to see. So, you bring a couple of teams, or...?
No, I just brought one team. I figured if I was going to be kind of playing in that friendly type of atmosphere with players who haven't played much before, I'd bring a team I hadn't played much. So, I'm learning Coursera at the moment and
nice.
Brought him along and...
I like him.
Yeah, get some reps in.
Yeah, so you've had a few games. Yeah, what do you like about him? What don't you like about him? What do you learn about him?
I quite like that he can hold down a midfield and can tank a lot of damage.
Yep.
I like that he gives you like a pretty reliable 2-2 style of game.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess the criticism of Shark is that, like, you have to play 3-0.
Yeah.
Whereas he mixes it up a bit, and I don't think, you know, that's no new revelation there.
No.
I like his Brewer playbook.
He is.
I like the wraps.
That plus, yeah, a few crowd outs and the fish having 2-inch melee all over the place is just nuts.
But I love Veteran Siren.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome.
I've experienced that. I've had a couple of games with our mate Jared. Jared McGraw. He's an absolute legend, so we've been on Vassal a bit, and I've had a couple of games with him there. And he's played Corsair both times. And the way you can scrum up a midfield, plus Vet Siren, and it was interesting, the way he was rolling it out was, because obviously you don't always have enough influence to go around, so he'd often just use a Sakana or a Grayscale, depending on the board position, just as a crowd out. And that one crowd out, plus Corsair, plus you knock them down.
Plus Dreadgaze.
Well, yeah, plus Dreadgaze. They can't get out. And then Vet Siren, he loaded up with 4, I think, at one point, and was just doing rapola after rapola.
Yeah, she's brutal.
It was so gross, yeah. So, yeah, no, it's definitely worth playing. Really good lineup.
The other thing I like about Vet Siren is that she really feels that kind of Steamforged design philosophy where you're forced to make a choice between two equally good players. Like, they've done really well there.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I guess you take Vet Siren for defensive tech and actually surprising amounts of damage.
She gets heaps of damage done. You get those wraps off and she actually gets a lot of work done. It's great.
Yep.
And minus 2 tack, I mean, as I discovered a few times.
Oh man, it's brutal.
You can't get away. So the little, you know, I think at one point he got Vitriol. So I played, I think I played minus and then I played smoke into him. He got Vitriol and yeah, minus 2 tack. I had to pop a cloud just to get plus 1 tack to try to get a push dodge to get out of the group.
Yep.
And then with a couple of crowd outs, you're rolling like 2 dice. You're stuffed at that point.
Yeah.
So unless you've got a Where'd They Go or a clone or something like that.
You're just locked into that kind of bad situation.
Oh, it's gross. Yeah.
So what did you bring?
I brought 2 lists. Under the same premise, I brought my Hunters because they're just awesome.
Yep.
And I love playing them. And then I'll also I also brought my Alkies because if you and I or one you know a couple of the other kind of more seasoned players get a game in I might play them. Brought Smoke and brought Midas. Might be the last hurrah for the old Midas before the new Midas comes along. So yeah, which is sad but different. So
what do you think about new Midas?
I don't know. I've actually it's interesting. I've chatted to a few guys. Jared and I chatted about him quite a bit. I think he's quite good. He's just, yeah, very different. Probably the only sad part I find is Heavy Burden is just so good, and you kind of lose that. Mm. But I think he's got, we worked out, like a native threat range if you've got a momentum for his heroic of 20 inches.
Mm.
So he threats goal a long way. And, yeah, he's just got a different kind of style. I think they've messed around with the legendary. I don't know how well or you know good or bad that's going to go, given that it's situational based on scoring a goal, and everyone knows that my 4 dice shots are terrible. So
yes,
if you trigger that with the snared, it looks fantastic. But I reckon it's a bit hit and miss. So yeah,
you'll be happy to know I missed one the other night.
Oh.
Shot on goal, 4 dice shot with grayscales. 3-3-3-3. It was amazing.
It's just so heartbreaking when you do it because you're like, four dice, surely one of them can come up.
Yep.
And I think I've missed 3 in the last, week and a half now. And then a 5 dice snapshot, which, you know, you definitely missed, but none of the dice got a 4 on it. So it was all 3 and below, so none of them actually would have scored a normal goal.
Dice are fucked, man.
Ah, man, who'd play a dice game?
Seriously. I reckon.
Nah, it's all good. I think I'll just start rolling 1 dice at a time. I just won't roll them all at the same time so I can slow down my disappointment.
I like that. I like that. You can build suspense as you do.
Yeah, and just slowly fall down.
And once you hit your target number, you just stop.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm not even going to go for the screamer. Don't care.
Yep.
I got the goal.
So, on our last forum post for, I think, episode 8 it was.
Yep.
Or maybe episode 7, I can't quite remember. Somebody put a suggestion to us that we should maybe talk about things that new players should be mindful of when they're starting out. And given that we're heading out to like play basically a new player event, it seems timely. So
absolutely.
I don't know. Maybe like we've got a bit of a drive. Might as well talk about that.
Yeah, for sure. So I quickly did a bit of a reply, you know, basic overall reply. The question was like, you know, okay, I've got about maybe 12 games under my belt. You know, what am I looking to do now? I think the first thing for me is start looking at making sure you're doing, you know your models, number one, know what they can do, and start to understand how much influence drives each of them, and then you get an overarching kind of picture of, you know, who you need to run hot, who you run cold, and situations like that.
Yep.
Definitely knowing your models. Start looking at things like teamwork, momentous actions, because they are massive in the game. Yes, they cost you momentum, but the reward of distance can be huge, and we all know that with some of the cards that you can get, like One Touch Football, where basically threat range extend about 8 inches.
I quite like how One Touch Football plays into that idea of using your momentum to get a result, as opposed to just harvesting it to win initiative the following turn.
Yes.
It seems like a good piece of design in that respect.
I think another thing for new players, so obviously you've got two resources within the game, influence to momentum. There's a common idea that you want to look to try to generate the same amount of momentum that you have influence going in or thereabouts. So, you know, if you're going in with 12 or 13 influence team, maybe look at, you know, wanting to generate, say, 10 momentum throughout the turn.
Yeah.
So think about how you do that and try to play your players to their strengths.
So I think it was Alex Hall who came up with the, or, you know, he sort of was the first one to vocalize the idea.
Yep.
Basically, this idea of influence to momentum conversion. And, yeah, you're basically looking for efficiency throughout. And you're not always going to get it.
No.
But, you know, the idea of approaching the game with the perspective, how can I get as much momentum as possible this turn and every turn, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not necessarily a one-to-one trade with every attack, too. So you've got to think about things like crowding out and, you know, the ability to... Some models, and we just talked about it with Vet Siren, some models have the ability that if you can crowd out, knock down, and then they go in, you might have spent influence to do things like the crowds and the knockdowns, which didn't get you momentum, but then someone like Siren can come in with 4 on her and she might wrap every, you know, so that 4 might actually go to 8 momentum. So in that case, spending another 4 influence to set up that situation isn't such a bad thing.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big one, and that's probably one of the curves you start to get to when you're playing the game, that you go from, right, I want to tackle and shoot, or I want to punch someone and just do damage, where you start to really understand the nuance of, okay, well, I want them to do it, but I want to do it in the most efficient way and generate the most resources from what I'm about to do.
Yes, yeah. And I think that kind of bleeds into another point, which is planning ahead. So if you're in a situation where, you know you want to take out a player, you can maximize your opportunities by, I guess, ganging up on that player to improve your dice pool.
Yep.
You know, you're suddenly boosting your attack, making it far more reliable.
Yep.
But that requires a bit of planning. And I've noticed playing guys like Trenton, he's very good at, I guess, using players who can reposition your opponent's players, like Gutter.
Yep.
Or using his players to get those gangs and then send Gutter into an optimal situation where she's got maybe the opportunity to do damage and a chain grab at the same time.
Yep.
So you're starting to plan several moves ahead to maximize your you know, your player's activation. So somebody like Gutter can quite easily, in an ideal situation, take out two players in one activation if you set it up right.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you a story, and Jared will love that I'm about to tell this. So a game we had the other night, he basically did that. We played, so we played the Corsair Fisherman, set it up, got the harpoon off on Vet Catalyst. I thought I had it back far enough. Apparently not. Pulled him in, and then next turn, Gutter goes in. He'd knocked him down, so it's plus one dice. He crowded him out, and then he managed to engage both Smoke and Calculus with Gutter, and it was Scything Blow City. And that basically was the game right there.
Yeah.
It was really well played. But that's essentially how afterwards I saw, or partway through, I saw it was about to happen, and at that point it was too late. And you could see that he'd actually planned that from the turn previous.
Yes,
so that's what we're kind of talking about, is understanding that, okay, where a player will come in, you know, in the turn, how you want to maximise their dice, but also thinking about, okay, well then I might want Gutter to go late in this turn and then early next turn to try to maximise the amount of damage I can put out.
Yes. I had a similar game with Tobias Ford the other night.
Yep.
Like Trenton's talked about this before, like no good choices, but I had a situation where I had two choices. One was to tackle, for Grayscales to tackle the ball and score a goal, or for me to activate either Corsair or Gutter and, you know, heal up those players so that they were less likely to die. I chose to tackle the ball and go to 8 points.
Yep.
Which left his rage open for a charge, and I didn't think he'd get both Corsair and Gutter, but he charged Gutter, who was knocked down, killed her, and then proceeded to kill Corsair in the same activation. And clearly he'd worked to set that up so that I had two choices, and if I made the wrong one, he'd be able to capitalize. And that was a game where I was like 8-2 up. And suddenly in that turn, he scored 8 points, two takeouts, one goal. So, you know, like, it was a brutal touch-up, but yeah. It was a good example of, you know, looking at what options were on the table and how to maximise, I guess, an activation by positioning well the previous turn.
Yeah, so looking ahead's probably the overarching theme we're kind of looking at there. Mm. So, I think definitely learning models, and I know you spoke to Trent in our very first episode about just knowing the models. So it doesn't, I mean, he memorizes them. It's one of the greatest experiences. When you play Trent, he'll tell you what column you've just rolled and what you can actually do on your own model before you can look it up. But basically knowing the opposition models is really handy. Now, not necessarily knowing their playbook, like, you know, photographic memory, but at least knowing, okay, I've just charged Kraken, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know roughly what he is. Knowing that he's got a knockdown early on his playbook, things like that, they're really important things because it'll govern what you do on your playbook or what you're trying to set up. And vice versa, if you're looking to counter on someone and say Kraken comes into you, I mean, it's probably a bad example, Corsair comes into you, knowing that, well, a counter here is probably pointless because he can knock me down on his two columns. So
yep.
Efficient use of momentum based on just having good knowledge of the cards.
Yeah.
It's always important.
Yeah, it applies to, like, pushes as well. Yep. Like, sometimes a push or a double push or a dodge or a double dodge on a playbook is just as useful for counterattacks.
Oh, absolutely. And knowing then if that model has an ability to get back in again, so... you know, some models like Philip will have, you know, a quick time or, you know, a way to basically do another 2-inch dodge back into you if you push them out.
Yep.
But still knowing that and knowing that they've got to choose a different result, maybe, like trying to knock you down might minimise the damage. I think one of the big ones I find is when you play against Rage. So Rage is really good at generating momentum, only takes one influence. But if you counter on him, on his charge, for example, you force him, and if you're a high def or a medium def model, you force him to take the knockdown, and if he has to take the knockdown and doesn't wrap, then he doesn't get his berserk attack, and you've just reduced one attack that he's got on you.
Which can be the difference between him, like, taking you out and not, sometimes.
Oh, like, flat out taking you out.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, knowing the... the opponents roughly what they're going to do. Obviously, we're not suggesting you sit there and, you know, learn it, but if you have the time and you love the game, definitely.
This is why I like apps. So I play with an app called Guild Ball Keeper, and yep. It's got a function where you can switch between your team roster and the library of all the player cards. And it's really useful just in terms of, like, flicking over, looking at who's coming in at you, what they're likely to do. And then you can sort of use that knowledge to work out, you know, whether you want to counterattack or not, whether it's a useful exercise or not.
Because, you know, when you talk about momentum and influence being resources in the game, momentum's the more valuable one. And if you spend it needlessly on a counterattack, you know, you're just wasting momentum. And that can cost you a game. If that means you go from a plus one dice roll for initiative next turn, you know, to an even dice roll, that could, you know, really cost you. So
I think sort of following on from the idea of planning ahead, another useful way to look at the game is in terms of how many points you can get in a single activation.
Yep.
And the idea of a 6-point activation is kind of core to a lot of players,
yeah.
Captains usually. So, you know, captains like Fillet are quite good at it.
So an example of that would be...
So Fillet, load her up with 6. You know, she's either got the ball or she has the ability to take the ball. Go in, take out a player, and then, you know, you either position yourself so you're in range of goal, or you use her dodges to get into range of goal, and then,
yep.
you know, you shoot a goal at the end of her activation.
Absolutely.
And that's super strong. Like, if you can set up a turn where you get, like, a 6-point activation, you know, you're halfway to winning the game, and that's huge.
Absolutely. And even if you spend, you know, 2 halves or either side of turn 1, turn 2 to set that up, so you do something end of turn 1 to do initial damage to then set up the getting the momentum for winning the roll, then killing that model, charging in, grabbing the ball and scoring, you
yep.
know, that's a really good way of doing it.
So I was talking to Trenton the other day, and he was saying that one of the reasons they reworked Fillet's hemophilia,
the dodge and all
yeah,
that,
yeah, was because she could effectively get 12 points over 2 activations. So he described a situation where she went in, took out somebody, scored a goal, won initiative because she generated so much momentum, and then went again and killed somebody, retrieved the ball, shot a goal.
Yeah.
You know, and like somebody like Trent's going to be able to pull that off because, you know, next level understanding of the game. But, you know, 6 points, 8 points, that's kind of living the dream, really.
But even if it's, yeah, even if it's 8 or 10 points, like even if they don't win the game on those two.
You're so far ahead.
Yeah, the game's over at that point. I mean, you and I know if you get to that late stage in a game where it's, you know, your opponent's on 8 or 10, then it becomes a completely different game because you've got to stop them from just killing one of your models or yeah. scoring a goal. And so the game completely changes at that point.
Yeah, you're playing on the back foot at that point.
Oh, absolutely. And we've had plenty of games where we basically play this. It becomes a real chess game of where do I put the ball? Okay, I put it over there because we know the other person needs to just score. And so you then stop trying to do other things. You just start trying to, you know, secure the ball. So
yeah.
No, that's a very good very good point. But looking for that, and then also looking to stop the opponent from setting up a 6-point activation is obviously, you know, a next level kind of thing.
Yeah.
And being able to see that, and that comes with probably reps and playing into different teams. I think the more you can play different games into different teams, the more you'll just learn naturally what they'll kind of do.
Yep. Yep.
I think that's really important. Also, Vassal, I found, so like I said, I played Jared McGraw, great bloke, but you playing someone from a different meta, you actually get a good idea of you know, how their game style, how they roll the game out, and it just gives you hints as to other things that could happen, because basically I find you lose games on not knowing something's coming. So if you can be able to, you know, look at the table and have a good idea of what's coming, then you should be able to outplay your opponent.
Yeah.
The more you can understand every possible situation, and that comes with reps and just, you know, learning the game, then the more you're going to be able to anticipate that and then counter move or do something pre, you know, then doing it. An example of that was I played with and against Corsair before. First game I played with him, I was playing Midas. I just spent the first 2 turns heavy burdening Corsair because I knew, well, he can't get up the board. As soon as he gets up the board, I'm in trouble, so I just need to slow him down. And -4, -4 move on him is just so brutal. Good. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and that really stifled the game for quite a while because he just couldn't get out of that.
There's a Facebook page for Vassal called for Guild Ball Vassal called Vassal Ball. So if you're interested in playing on Vassal, it's a good place to like throw up a post and find somebody who is keen to play a game. And once I found that Facebook group, because I was jumping on Vassal on the hope that somebody would be there, but once I found that and started posting, like the amount of games that I got just went up astronomically.
Yeah.
And it's really awesome to tap into other metas and, you know, talk to people all over the world. And I met some like really awesome people as well, like really lovely people.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
And Quinn Duggan. Fucking lizard.
Shout out to Quinn.
Hello, Quinn.
Hello. No, absolutely. I think, you've got me to get on there a lot more than I used to. You and I have played a few games. It's quite a good tool. This is the other thing. Probably the one thing I struggle with is just on a tabletop, I can visualise and my range kind of guessing is pretty good. In Vassal, obviously, you have the ability to put up different auras and measure different distances. Sometimes I don't want to, though. I'd rather be able to eyeball it, and I can't eyeball it as good on there as I can in real life. But I mean, that I'm sure comes with just a bit of time.
It forces you to be a bit cagey, doesn't it? Yeah. Like, you don't. So the good thing about Vassal is you can like throw up an aura in inches. So like, you know, 1 inch, 2 inch, 3 inch. You can work out how far your opponent is or where you need to place your player, and it's quite exact. But it does telegraph what you're trying to do if you're, if you do it out of that player's activation. And I think that's also pretty helpful because it, like, teaches you to play in such a way as to not telegraph your information.
Yeah.
And that can be really important as well. So, like, you've got a rough idea of what you want to do, and you're sort of looking at the board state going, oh, yeah, that looks like it's possible. So, you know, maybe Gutter is about 12 inches away from something, and that gives her the opportunity to sprint and chain grab and then set up another player to go in and do damage. But you don't necessarily want to, measure that out and show your opponent that that's what you're thinking.
Unless you're just about to do it. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that sort of translates to the table as well, I think. So, like, because it's all open information, I guess you need to sort of consider what sort of information you want to give away when you're playing as well.
Yeah.
And that's been covered by other dudes on other podcasts. Yeah, I think it's like translates across all games, really.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to tell them what you're thinking, but if they ask for a distance, absolutely. But if you measure a distance between two models thinking you're going to activate him in three activations time,
yep,
then you've just basically
suddenly
told them
what you're about to do. It's like a tell, yeah.
So, yeah, no, I did hear that on another podcast, and I did find that quite interesting because you do that, and Vassal, I'm shocking at it because I just go, oh, pop that aura, put a model there. Yeah, I can do that. Right. Oh, man, I wanted to do that a couple of activations.
Yeah.
So.
But again, it's like, it's a really good way to get reps up, especially if you've got like a small meta. Or, you know, you can't get to your club or your store as regular as you like.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I've got a game with Mike Buckley, one of the pundits. He's been trapped at home. Poor guy, can't get out on Thursday night to the gaming club.
Yep.
So I got a game with him the other night, well, a week or so ago. So it's, yeah, good to kind of get on there. I don't think he played for ages, so he was keen. He's still keen to get another game in, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really hoping that case of bedbugs clears up soon for him. Sounds like hell.
It does.
Yeah.
So, any other tips for entry level kind of, or, you know, 12 game, you know, 15 game kind of players? I mean, other than play more and, you know, maybe play the same team, don't jump around too much.
Yeah, I think that's probably the key point. Just keep playing games and, you know, this stuff will happen organically. I mean, there's some people who like to study the game and, you know, get a good idea of what everything does, and there's like a lot of merit in that. And there's some people who like to just get the knowledge by reps, and both are equally valid. But I mean, if you do both, you're in a good position.
Absolutely. I mean, the other thing, sorry, I did think of is jump online. There's always a lot of games online you can watch.
Yes.
TNG Productions occasionally, they do bat reps. I know and I'm going to forget the handle for it. I know there's a few from the Brisbane area that have put games up there. So
Irresistible Force have thrown some up.
Yeah, is it under there? I can't even remember. We'll look that up anyway. You'd be able to see games that either Trent, Tobias, some of the guys that we've played.
Nebs has got a few up there.
Nebs has got a few up there. So, and just watch games and see what they do, see the interactions. I know I used to do this in other gaming systems. I would watch a report. I'd then, if I saw something happen, I didn't understand it, I'd pause the game, I'd actually look it up and see, that's what he's done there. Just to get a greater understanding and see, you know, those little interactions that might not have been, you know, obvious when you first kind of start playing the game.
Yep. Yeah, and I guess, like, if you're new to a meta, find your pundit and force him to do his job.
Yeah.
Just say, like, you know, I want to play, give me some games. And maybe explain what you're trying to get out of those games as well. Like, if you're trying to learn a particular team, you know, he might have an idea as to how it plays and be able to, like, give you the basic strategy, and you can sort of go from there.
And maybe he might even point to, okay, you want to learn fish. Well, so-and-so is a really good fish player. He can give you some pointers and get some games against that person as well.
Yep.
You know, and they can teach you the nuances of, you know, how to get Corsair to knock someone down and crowd them out, or, you know, how when you activate certain models in a turn, things like that. So,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think we're not too far away.
Absolutely. We're about to roll up. Well, should be a good day. Probably get, I don't know, 3 or so games in, I reckon.
Yeah, I hope so.
About 6 hours of gaming. So hopefully we get some random prizes. I was going to lay down to you that the challenge between us both, that you have to try to get either a goal or a takeout with your mascot.
All right, Tom.
All right. That's the challenge.
I'm playing tentacles, so I'm not sure.
We'll see. You've got Corsair.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I might have to play hunters, because if I'm playing alchemists, I don't think I can get either of those. So
yeah, see, Salt as a goal shot is probably not too bad.
Yeah.
He can do it.
So that's the challenge, the gauntlet's being laid down.
All right, I take up your challenge.
Fantastic.
All right. Back in the car.
Ooh, steamy car too.
Yeah, it's a bit warm. It's been out in the sun all day.
Yeah. Choose the optimal parking spot, did I?
No, well, I don't think there are any trees, dude.
No, we are out north and it's quite barren and sparse.
I don't believe in trees out here.
Yeah, it's a bit like a Mad Max set, though, isn't it?
It's post-apocalyptic. But with a lot of, like, industrial buildings.
Yeah, yeah.
So, thanks, capitalism.
Oh, man. No, good day. Got a couple of games in. Cash day.
You were very friendly, helping out Jacob, who's a new player.
Yeah, I did. So I got a game. So basically the premise of the day was you scored points for unlocking certain achievements. One was giving a demo or being part of a demo. So I played Jacob. Great bloke. He's up at Harlequin Halls and plays a few other gaming systems. So I got to play. I rocked out some hunters, and he rocked out some masons. So got to kind of roll him through the whole game. He hadn't actually done much playing. I think he played 2 or 3 games. So I walked him through a lot of stuff, but I still managed to, you know, get counter charged. And I think he'd been itching the whole game to trigger the brick counter charge, and he got it off like twice to quite good effect, which was
very
good.
Nice. Very
which
nice.
Was good. Good game. Cena got a. The old bear hug takeout, so I got to an odd number of points, which kind of threw me. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I was trying to work out my maths as to how do I get to a win.
Yep.
Couldn't quite get there. I think it was 12-11 in the end.
Man.
Or 12. I was basically, pretty close. So, no, it was a great game. I was obviously walking him through stuff, but I won't take that away from, you know, he was doing the right stuff, you know, making the right decisions.
Yeah, he's a smart dude. Like him.
Good bloke. So how about yourself, your first round?
I played Daz. Big Daz, nerdvinergames.sa.com. Buy all your shit from him. He's a great guy. except when he gets halfway through a game and has to go cook a barbecue lunch and says, yeah, you're about to win this, so I'm done.
That's how that one ended.
Daryl.
Come on, mate.
No, he was good. It was good to play with him. We played Corsair Fish. I played Corsair Fish into Brewers, Tapper Brewers, and yeah, it was pretty grindy. He received the ball. He got a goal with Friday, and then I had sort of set up so that, like, I'd ganged up on a heap of shit and just got my first takeout and was about to score. So I got to 6 points before he went, all right, I can see how this game's going to go. Let's just go eat lunch.
Okay, yeah. Well, kudos to him for cooking lunch. That was good.
It was good.
Yes, it was very good. We were
I had three sausages.
Three sausage man. I've heard that about you.
Yeah.
So,
forest of dicks.
So, we had a bit of break. My game, so Jacob, obviously, we didn't play clock, so my game extended till after the break. But I did manage to, at one point, basically towards the end, where we were going for specific kind of things, one of the things was score a goal or get a takeout with your mascot. And so I had the opportunity to kill Flint by shooting with Egret, doing the two damage, and then she would have activated pretty much last, and then he dies from poison and I get the takeout. Mm. Instead, I needed to use one of the two to pass to Fahad engaged, so I needed, needed fives. Jagged that, he dodges out, then because I was up on activations, Fahad then walks towards the goal, one dot shot at goal, thank you very much, slots the goal, it was glorious.
Nice. So,
yeah, managed to get the...
Live the dream, man. The old mascot goal.
Mascot goal. I was actually angling for the mascot takeout the whole game, but fucking Brick's counter charges just kept shutting it down. I got Brick down to about two or three, but couldn't quite just get in on him. So
yep.
With Fahad at the right time.
So I actually got the takeout with my mascot.
Oh, nice.
Yep. So the second game I played into Brewers again. So Esther's Brewers this time. And... oh man, what's that dude's name?
Chris. Legend.
Fucking huge.
Yeah.
Like that dude is he is Brick in human form. Yes. Like I would not fuck with that guy. total legend. Like such a good bloke. But yeah, it was like 12-0 because he was kind of getting back into the game after a big hiatus and just didn't really know what to expect.
Well, and the fish lineup, that fish lineup, jokingly, is a bit of a Brewers lineup, isn't it?
It is,
I mean, Corsair, they say he's got the Brewer, he is the Brewer playbook kind of thing. So
yeah, when he starts rapping, like, you're consistently pulling off, like, four to five damage with one influence. It's pretty good.
And two momentum in that stage is just, that's just gross.
Yeah, man. So. Vet Siren is friggin' amazing. Yeah. Like, her ability, when you've set up things properly, her ability to trade one influence for two momentum is just, like, it's super reliable.
Yeah, so bringing her in, even if she's only got a couple on her, and she just wraps ski, thank you very much.
Yep.
So, needless to say, then you were probably winning the initiative each time. And
yeah,
it was just... kind of push the game the direction you want.
And, like, I had Gutter, and Gutter, like, basically just did Gutter things and Scything Blowed and whatever, but I managed to set it up so that I went first. Corsair punched Esther's down to a one. He then went with Esther's, healed her up back to five. Then Vet Siren went, punched her back down to one. Then Tentacles went in and, like, just face-hugged her to death.
Face-hugged.
And I just did that so I could get the achievement, you know?
It's like out of Alien, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Thing fucking landed on her face. Brilliant.
But poor bastard, he misses, like, a five-dice shot on goal with Mash. Like, that's bullshit. It should have been 12-4.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Yeah.
No, round two, I got Sean from Jackal Design. Great guy. We've been meaning to have a game for ages, so it was actually really good to hook up. Unfortunately for him, he'd never played against Smoke before, and I was keen to play... I know Sean's a good player, so I was keen to play some of my Alkies. So I took Smoke, Vitriol, Naja, Mercury, Calculus, and Decimate. I find that's a pretty good all-round list. First turn, he was receiving. I kind of kick it off to one side. He grabs it with Shank. Knows I got AoE, so dodges back behind his line and kicks towards Boiler, who's forward. Misses the kick, gets the one deviation that goes between his models, doesn't go over bases, hits an obstruction about 2 inches over his deployment line right in front of goal.
Yeah.
And I kicked with Smoke. So I look at it and go, ooh, here we go. And he was playing Tenorizer too. So I cloud jump, charge Tenorizer, can snap the ball on the way in. Because I get the charge, I get a double, like a wrap, I get a double push and a single push, both momentous, push him out of the target number range so he doesn't drop my target number for the shot at goal.
Yeah.
And yeah, first activation, slot a goal, first turn.
Fuck.
And he kind of looked at me like, oh shit.
Fuck, that is brutal.
So then he realised he could, he'd really need to try to shut her down. But I took the dodge off the goal, then he had a lot of one-inch melee, so I'm basically just unpredictable, like taking the unpredictable movement every time he gets close with the model I think he's going to do the damage with.
Yep.
So I dodged away, chased a bit. He came up the board with Boiler and Princess on the other side, and that became a bit of a beat fest with Vitriol. So I had Vitriol on the left-hand side with Calculus and Mercury. But with Nadja as well, I basically had four characters and I just kept kind of crowding out. So I was able to basically eventually put both of them down.
Yeah.
Vitriol, Boiler came up and got in cover, and so Vitriol just said goodnight. I struggled to kill the dog a few times on one. But so I got to 10 or 12, sorry, 8 or 10 pretty quickly. And then he came back, got a takeout, and that's when my model started to crumble. But I basically crowded Boiler out, had a couple of activations where I got enough crowds with Calculus and Mercury, where if you crowd a few times and they're rolling 6 or 7 dice, then they're going to hit the momentous 2s.
Yep.
Kill Boiler for the second time after he came on, and that was that was it. So it was a good game, really good game. I think had he known Smoke a little bit better, it would have been a hell of a lot closer, and probably could have rolled over me. So
yeah, it's funny though, isn't it? Like if you get those quick goals, like you get two quick goals, being eight points up is just like it's a huge advantage in terms of momentum, but also psychologically as well.
Oh, and their decision making has to change then, because they can't put the ball. They have to be really conservative with who's got the ball and where it is.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you can play towards that. You can start positioning models in threat range. It's kind of like, you know, chess, where you have, you know, certain areas that threaten the board, and you want to be in those areas. You know.
Yeah.
You know, it's really good. The other one was that, and I showed him, you know, Smoke's card before the game. I made sure he knew. But he brought Princess back on with Husbandry, and then I legendary killed Princess. Yeah. Which I feel pretty bad about, because it's gross. It's fucking gross.
Yeah, I felt the same way. You know, like, just, when I was, like, he ran Friday up, put her front and center, Corsair, like 6 inches away from Corsair. I didn't even have to move, man. Just like, boom, throw the harpoon, drag her in, and suddenly my turn's set up.
Yeah, exactly.
And it feels a bit cheap to kind of, you know how the game's going to roll after that. Like, you're probably going to keep winning initiative, or you definitely win the next turn.
Well, bear in mind, both these guys would have played a few times, so it's not like that. I mean, Sean plays a bit.
I guess that's the other good thing about, like, going out to that sort of thing and playing people who don't play as much as you. You're actually doing a good thing, because you expose them to, like, different teams and also different things they may not have seen before in their own meta.
Yeah, that's what Sean said afterwards. He's like, you know, I haven't seen Smoke, I know exactly, you know, now just don't go after her, don't try to kill her, kill everyone else.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, absolutely. You know, shut down the goal threat, maybe kill the ball a little bit, maybe don't take Brisket or look for models with 2-inch melee, but yeah, I've enabled him to know what to do and what not to do.
I gave Mike, it is Mike, right?
Mike? Chris.
Fuck. Man. I'm going to have to edit
Mikey Chris.
Yeah, I gave Chris one of the momentous tackle widgets that you had knocked up as well. I was like, you know, if I can go for a drive, give people stuff, be friendly, be collegiate.
Be collegiate. Oh, yeah, that's good for building the meta. We did give out some it's a frickin' bear stubby holders, thanks to the quote from our good friend,
Tim
W.
Big shout out to Timmy.
He's a legend.
Fucking champ.
So, that'll be awesome for all those guys. They all got to take one of them home. We all got a prize from Big Daz from Nerdvana as well. So
yep.
I got a start on my engineers. I've got a pin vice.
Good stuff. That's a nice pickup. I got a limited edition Tater.
Oh, nice.
I wanted Vet Rage, but, you know, should have got more achievements. I was just... Daryl fucking stooged me, man.
Oh.
He stooged me on multiple levels. Fuck you, Daryl.
we might have just lost a sponsor there. I don't know. No, it was, all in all, good day. I think it was good to have the game with Jacob. I know he's one of the guys from down south, so we'll be playing him again, I'm sure, down there. He's pretty keen. His Infinities and other stuff.
Yeah, I've lined a game of Infinity up with him.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, man.
So that'll be good. And we know that we've kind of converted a few more blokes down there, so, you know, slowly growing.
Oh, man, it's like, I feel that we may reach a tipping point soon.
Yeah.
I feel the trickle may become a flood, which, like, for South Australia will be, like, 3 more people.
Oh, right? Absolutely. That's a full-blown meta at that point.
No, I know. Three-man meta.
Three-man meta. It's a bit like that.
Fuck yeah. Yeah.
So now, just, cruising home.
Any observations about, like... what you saw done wrong today, like Sean's maybe not a good example, because like he's pretty au fait with the game. But like anything that you may have noticed
with Sean's go or Joe or either
game.
I mean, obviously with Jacob, this comes back to some of the things we were talking about early. In fact, did we mention? I can't remember. Healing your models or clearing conditions, that's something that he didn't do as much. He kind of did do occasionally.
Yep.
That's something you always want to keep an eye on. Whether you take a mental note and think, right, every activation I should always look at my cards, see if anyone needs a heal, check my momentum, and then kind of go from there.
Yep.
That's a big takeaway. I reckon that potentially extended into Sean's game where he did, I mean, smoke's very condition heavy and I was throwing AoEs and poison was everywhere, but that did kind of weigh in on him, like it became a bit of a posturing game on, you know, how much momentum or whether you want to get rid of those conditions. I reckon there are a few times he probably could have healed more.
Yep.
But then maybe I could have. He basically came close to taking out Mercury on a counterattack at one point. So
yep.
It's definitely something to always keep an eye on. And the counterattacks are a very poignant point. That,
poignant.
Poignant point.
Very poignant.
I'm pointing towards. He, brilliant. Quality rating.
Oopsie. That was straight out of the Moops playbook.
What's the Moops? I'm gibbering now, aren't I? Right. I just need Denno. We just need to splice in
the just, he just called
stop
you
gibbering.
An effing C and, yeah. Like, you know, you'd move on.
Yeah. So, yeah, don't punch someone when they can counter and kill you. That's another one to, you know, trick for young players.
Yeah.
How about yourself? Any things to take home?
I think threat ranges. Like, in my game with Daz and in my game with Craig...
Right.
I noticed that they both were quite happy to walk into advantageous threat ranges for me and didn't really consider how that would affect their game plan. So, you know, like if you know Corsair has got like a 12-inch threat range,
yeah,
and he's the first to go, set up, drag you in, knock you down so that the rest of his team can get in and do damage on you. Like, obviously, a big takeaway is that you don't walk into a threat range without a reason. You know, maybe you're wanting to pull a bait move,
yeah,
and that's different. But if you walk into a threat range blindly, that's how you get wrecked.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's certainly what happened in both those games.
Yeah, I think, yeah, threat range is a big one to always keep an eye on. If you're going to do it, like I said, have a reason. You know, if you're going to lob some fire on them and they've got no way of clearing it, you know, so you can minimise their threat range.
Yep.
Yeah, or you're trying to sell them a bad choice. You know, that's the other one. So,
yeah.
You know, make them try to harpoon a Def 5 model or a Def 6 model. Or...
Exactly. And I was playing Jared last night. I was playing Fillet into his Corsair because he wanted to practice for a tournament. And, you know, I kick off. He let me kick off with Fillet. I don't know that that's the right choice because she gets 7 inches up the board and just, like, threatens the world. So his first move is to retrieve the ball. Great. My first move is move up Boiler and make Fillet Def 6.
Yeah.
And then my next move is send in Fillet and make him waste a bunch of influence trying to fish for sixes. And, yeah, you might get your two knockdown. Your second result on Corsair's playbook, which is a knockdown. But fuck me, man. Like, you also might get nothing and get nothing for it. Or 1-6, so you get one damage and no momentum. So, you know, like, asking questions like that can be great.
Yeah, I had a few interactions with my games where, yeah, looking at trying to maximise dice pools where I was crowding out with Mercury. Naja's great for it, so I just kept Naja in behind Mercury and Calculus. Would crowd out, and I could usually get at least two crowd outs, and then Vitriol would come in or Calculus would come in, and they're rolling 7 dice, and all of a sudden you can actually get to 2 or 3 on the playbook, and with Calculus and Mercury, that's momentous damage. Conversely, I had a situation where, so turn two, I won the initiative, the ball was loose off to one side, I set up so that Smoke could cloud jump, sprint and get it, and also engage, what's the goalkeeper again?
Tenderizer.
Right, so I'd fully loaded, that's cost me 2 influence to get to there, I need 1 to shoot, so I get 3 attacks basically to generate 1 momentum. Attack 4 against a Def 3. Couldn't get the 1 momentum. I did 1 damage, 1 damage, 1 damage. And it just showed me that, you know, getting that 1 extra, whether I'd moved a model in at the end of the turn before to engage, just to get me to attack 5, whether that makes a difference. Now, I can't remember if I had that possibility. Attack 5 versus 4 is massive if you're just looking to get to column 2. Like,
yeah.
Just subtly thinking about things like that, but thinking about it the turn before.
Yep. Well, I managed to get a number of players down to like attack one, effectively where they got one dice and that was it. And you know, against a model with armor, they're doing nothing.
Yeah. And if they don't have a where they go or an unpredictable, they're not going anywhere.
I like that about Corsair. Like that harpoon, like it legitimately feels like fishing.
Yeah.
It's good fun.
I hit,
like you drag the whale into the boat and then you just beat it about the head with a paddle. It's great.
Then you put an octopus on its face. Fantastic.
Fucking choke it out. Good fun. Good fun. Go to sleep.
Just gently patting its face.
Stroking it with a spare tentacle. I love that guy. I love tentacles, man.
He is awesome.
Yeah, he's a cool little guy.
2-inch melee on a mascot is actually really good.
Yeah, and like people are like, what the fuck? Yeah. 2 inches? It's like Naja, man. Like they should have made him bigger.
Yeah, they should have made the model bigger. He's still an awesome model. What I find interesting with that is I took Mercury, took Naja, knowing I have one less influence, but it doesn't bother me. I'm still playing a 12 influence side.
Yep.
And I just find that the survivability of Naja, plus the 2-inch melee just outweighs the extra influence.
Yeah, man, unpredictable is so good. It's so good. Hey, you want a bit of fun trivia?
Oh, what?
So you know the King Cobra?
Yeah.
Not actually a cobra.
What?
Yeah, it's called King Cobra because it eats cobras.
Oh, get the shit out of here.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I think my daughter told me that.
Oh, it's the kind of thing my son would know. He basically just... We played a game the other night where he names a dinosaur. He knows all their names, like corrects how I pronounce them. And so we're going, he names two dinosaurs, and which one would win in a face-off? Now, bear in mind, I got no idea what either of them look like.
Right.
So then I grab the book, so he just names it, I guess one, whatever. I grab the book, and I start naming it, thinking, yeah, you got no idea now. He's like, oh, no, that's the shark-looking one with this on page 34. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. He's a 9-year-old. Yeah, so...
That's good, man.
Naturally, he knew... the shark beats up the shitty little herbivore. They probably didn't even live in the same time period. I don't know what I was thinking.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Fuck. I would watch that reality TV show.
It was deathmatch. It looked like it had like this just tongue lip thing that spikes. It was weird.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So.
If only Jurassic Park were like that.
Yeah. Oh, he loves that. He wants to watch the new one too. Nah. Look at that damn...
It was alright, actually. I didn't mind it. I went in expecting nothing, and I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah?
It was big and stupid and fun.
But fun, that's the...
Yeah, it was good fun.
Yeah. Nice.
So yeah, man, not a bad day.
No, it was good. Good to get some games in. I know, I like a good tourney. We'll have to set one up.
Before Christmas time.
Down south, so we'll have to... It's a hard time of year now, because every other person's got something on a Saturday, so... It'll probably be a six to eight man quick one. But that's cool.
Will you wear a Santa suit?
I will. I'll
get a Santa hat, man. I'll wear one.
Yeah. And bring some reindeer.
Yep.
Fine. We'll eat some reindeer sausages. It'll be good. Yeah.
Man, they were good sausages.
They were. Daz looks after us, so.
He is. He's a fucking legend.
Awesome.
All right, man. Well, another fun trip out.
Yeah.
We came back alive.
Barely. We're almost south of the border.
Yeah, it's a freaking bear.
It's a freaking bear. All right. We have Pasha Kornienko on the line all the way from Scotland. Welcome, Pash.
Hello, hello, hello. How you doing?
And you're known as Pash Monster on the forums. Is that correct?
I am known by many names. That is one of them.
Many names.
That is a deep fact.
Some of those names we can't mention on this podcast, even though...
For legal reasons, yes.
Yes, yes, indeed. So part of our sticker, I've also got Dave here. Sorry, Dave. How you going, mate?
Hello,
is that we like to ask three leading questions. So, Dave, do you want to fire away with those, mate?
Indeed. Right. Pash, thank you for joining us. Welcome to this den of iniquity. First question, do you have anything you'd like to say to Alex Botts?
Oh, man. Next time I see you, Alex, finger in the ass. That's all I'm saying.
Brilliant. Second question may require a little bit of a preparatory explanation. Are you familiar with the Dan Harmon Show community, Pash?
No.
Okay. Well, this is just going to be fucking awful. I've been watching loads of Community, and I think there's one important question that arises out of this, and that is Annie or Britta? You just have to pick one.
Britta, because she sounds filthy. I hope she's of legal age.
That's a win.
And I'm not wrong.
It's a good choice, Pash, but in this particular case, there are no wrong choices. There's no wrong choices.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Third question, topical, relevant, brisket or fillet?
Oh, brisket, man. Team brisket all the way.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's enough lesbians in my life. I reckon I need some sturdy, red-blooded, sort of gender-specific guild ball in my life, and that's the way I want to roll with it.
Man, I don't think anybody would judge you too harshly. I'm Team Fillet myself, because I love an angry lesbian.
Of course.
Yeah, but again, no wrong answers. No wrong answers. So you sent us a message over Twitter, and amidst the abuse and the sexual innuendo, there was a nugget of an idea. We thought we'd talk about that. So, you know, you wanted to chat about the players who are in contention to take the title at Worlds. So we'd like to have a chat about that with you. But I think before that, we're sort of talking about new player advice this episode, particularly in the Carball segment. So maybe we'll just get you to sort of talk about your meta and maybe some advice to new players that you would care to impart.
Yeah, of course. Now, first of all, before we set off on that part there, and this is something that's been bugging me since, like, episode one. Hmm. Is it Kabul, as in the city in Afghanistan, or is it Carpool? Or, I mean, this is, I understand, a very sort of, you know, a border specific issue, and you know, I understand the colonies have their own sort of lingo and whatnot. So explain exactly what are you saying when you're saying Kabul?
We're saying Kabul in Afghanistan. So the reason we're in a car is we're pretending we're driving a car bomb into a checkpoint.
Nice. that sounds like legitimate sort of evening activities that any respectable member of society would be carrying out.
Yeah, and it's not the sort of thing.
Compared to, you know, the rest of your sort of nation, I guess. I suspect that's probably normal behaviour.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not the sort of thing that'll get you on an internet watch list either. So, you know, it's all fine. Upside. Particularly when the car goes
I'm on
boom.
That already. This won't even flag. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Catch the podcast. Then.
No, it's actually Carball, Carball. And it's so called because we talk about Guild Ball in a car.
Yeah, it's right. pretty inventive, really. I mean, we went deep into the tank to come up with the name.
You must have been there for hours coming up with it.
Yeah.
And you're saying, oh man, your PR management department must be earning their bucks today.
Actually, we're losing money by doing this.
Yes, yes.
It's costing us money.
Oh man, well, I hope it's well spent.
Yes.
That remains to be seen, Pash. That remains to be seen.
So, what were we talking about?
Yeah, tell us about your meta, and give some advice to new players.
Right, okay. So, I'll kick us off. I'm based in Scotland, UK, obviously, for the now. And that's another matter altogether. We have a fairly young meta. I mean, I think most of the players in our scene have probably only started playing Guild Ball beginning of this year, 2016, so it's only really started to take off properly in that time. We're lucky enough that we actually have, I would say, you know, probably about 30 to 40 people within about an hour's drive of each other who might be willing to go to an event, but we've yet to have an event that's more than 16 people. So, but on the plus side, the ones that we have had, I've got a pretty good commitment from folk, and people seem to be enjoying it. So, and it's drawing new people in as well every time, which is a plus in my books, I think. In terms of advice for new players, best thing I can do is probably just recommend to get lots and lots of games in. Find some people you like playing with, and just find a regular time set aside, one day a week or one day every other week or whatever, and just you know, get some games in. That hobby time is precious. Make the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about that. So in our Carball episode, we did discuss that reps is probably the number one thing to do. I mean, we went into a few other bits and pieces about, you know, knowing your cards, knowing your teams, staying to the same team for a while. But I think nothing accounts for getting, you know, consistent games in.
So
yeah, absolutely. Definitely. That's the only way you get better at a game is to play better players. If you find people that are better than yourself and seem to know the game a bit better, you know, just like you say, as long as they're not dicks to play against, you just get the reps and get some games. And then, to be honest, you'll find the game unlocks more and more sort of depth as the more you play it, I think.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Now, we had, so one of our local guys, we had that moment where you get a new player and they start playing and they finish a game. And so I played Ellie from our club. And at the end of the second game, he had that look and that, like, oh my God, I just want to play this for the next 24 hours kind of look. And it was, yeah, it was fantastic because we've all been there. We're all been like, oh, your brain starts to unlock all the synergies and that kind of thing. And it's fantastic yeah. just in a new player.
I think that's one of the best parts of Guild Ball is the very beginning where you pick up a card and you have no idea, you know, what any of it does, and then you start to learn the rules, you figure out how the playbook mechanic works, momentum, all the traits, all the character plays, and then how all that sort of interacts with other players. And just every single time it's sort of like that eureka moment where you're like, oh man, they can do this, oh, and what about this, and I can, oh, and these combos that I can create and all that jazz. And I mean, some of them might just be crazy, but to be honest, as long as you get excited about it, what's the harm?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, thank you for that tidbit of wisdom, Pash. You know, that's very generous, and we appreciate you cracking open your head and pouring out some of your knowledge.
Oh, very nice. Definitely. So if you enjoy the game, play more games, kids. That's the big tidbit of the day.
Mm. Let's jump into this chat about worlds. I know you're itching. So, you know, the scene is set, the various personages are assembled, they're making their way to SteamCon, some of them as we speak. We know Trenton's already jumped on a plane and is in Germany at the moment. We've got a Keymaster Gatekeeper situation happening. The ghosts are heading to Zool. Who do you think is in contention here, Pash? Because I know you have a lot of opinions about this.
I have some. I'll tell you who's not in contention. And everybody else who has to sit at home and watch the carnage unfold.
You came close though, didn't you, Pash? You played the final of the Origin. Not close enough. Okay, sorry.
No, it was good. It was good. I mean, if Henry, you know, didn't pay me so much to lose that game to throw. I don't know if I'd be able to live myself. But on the plus side, I can afford all the hookers and booze that I want. So really, I think there's a plus and minus in everything.
There you go.
No. The big man won the game fair and square, and I just hope he takes it all away. That's the main thing. But we have six names, and we have two spots that are still unfilled. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I actually did some preparation for this, believe it or not. I know this is a new concept for you guys. Doing some prep for an episode is, you know,
research.
But
that's
basically the level of professionalism that I bring to this wonderful little episode.
You're mucking up the place, Pash. We've got a
sorry, Rob.
We're pretty loose here, mate. We're pretty loose.
Loosey goosey.
Yep.
To be honest, the reason I did the research is it's been so long since I've heard, you know, about the different winners of different championships, I've forgotten who each one of them is. I know it's bad, but from some of them we hear more often than others. So I thought maybe to start us off, it's a good idea to run through the six guys that we know, where they've won, what team they've won with, and maybe, you know, roughly what sort of field did they face in coming with that. Just in a brief
Let's
sense.
Let's do that. That sounds good.
All right.
So, number one.
Go for it. Which one do you guys remember?
Well, should we go back to the start? I think the first one, and he actually even played with season one plot cards, was Mr. Jordan Murphy from Canada. He played Brewers, I believe.
That's right,
The field with some Esters and Avarice and Greed Tech.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. Jordan Murphy, I've got him down for Brewers here. Played five games to get through to the final and earned his spot back in possibly April, I think it was. So, I mean, wow, that was miles ago. And that's one of the reasons why I almost forgot who's all in this, because, like you say, this is an ongoing thing. It's been on for about 7 months already. So we're almost at the end.
Yeah, so Jordan was involved in season one or season two rules testing. I think he was part of a playtesting group.
Nice.
So, you know, he's got that, like, depth of understanding of the game, and I think that'll probably help him.
So you're saying it's a fix?
It's a fix.
I'm just saying, as a fellow member of the Commonwealth, you know, he has our moral support.
And if you need the number of a good Indian bookkeeper who's got odds that'll go the right way, just let me know.
Sweet. I think I'll hit you up on that, definitely.
Yeah.
All right, okay. So who's the next one that you guys remember?
Knack came after that. Jordan Knack was the next to win something.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it was. I've got him as Morticians, and I think that was the one where it was Morticians all the way.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Throughout the event. And I've got it down as a four gamer, but it could well have been a five. I really don't know. There's not a lot of information available on that one.
Well, he ground his way through in some qualifiers, didn't he?
Yeah. So there were four qualifiers, I think three or four qualifiers, where there were only two or three game qualifiers. And then on the Sunday, whoever qualified, I believe it was a four-round event of those guys. So, yeah, he ground his way through. I'm pretty sure he played all the qualifiers and also with different teams and managed to qualify with three different teams as well. So
nice.
I think he has a good knowledge depth. I also think what we – and that's when the whole apocalypse came about with us.
Yeah, I
reckon the – from what we saw, the Chicago meta knew how to play Obi really well, took him not everyone there took him. But knew how to basically skew games with that and the Avarice and Greed matchup. And if you didn't have that, then you were in a world of pain.
Yeah.
I think the other thing you hear from people is that Jordan's an excellent technical player. He's got like a long history of playing competitive games, particularly like competitive chess. So I think in terms of, you know, both raw talent and experience, he's probably up there. And I think he'd probably be a favourite to take out the whole tournament. The question is whether he'll play Morticians again or whether he'll switch over to Engineers or, you know, a different team just to bring that surprise factor.
I think the predictable safe route is to go down the Morticians, but I would like to see him bring in Engineers or anything else for that matter, just to show that there is something else other than, you know, how broken Obulus is and whatever else.
Yes, yeah. I think they're calling that particular Gen Con run with all the Obuluses a forest of dicks.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, that's fair enough. Okay, so we've got two Jordans so far. All right, who's next?
Now, I'm not sure chronologically whether it was the Australian one or the German one next.
It was Tim.
I think it was Tim.
Tim Wisniewski, the fucking drunken master.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
Yeah. Freaking bear.
Yeah, it's a freaking bear.
He's the man that launched 1,000 ships and deflowered 1,000 daughters.
Probably at the same time.
All drunk.
So he's another Morticians player as well. I think he's he played a 5-round one, 4 with Obulus and 1 with Scalpel. He's a dark horse. I think he's deceptive. He's one that you'll expect to have an easier time against, but I think what he'll do is he'll get you drunk, he'll finger you, and then he'll destroy you on the tabletop. I think that's his tactic.
Yeah, I think he's just played that many games that his reps, it's just muscle memory. So his body takes over at some point when the alcohol, like it's directly proportional to the alcohol consumption. And then, he just starts beating you and he doesn't even know what's happening.
For my money, he's the people's champion. He is, you know, like his girlfriend is smoking hot as well. Like, go Timmy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, man, he's got it all.
He's the whole package.
And she's back in Germany for this weekend, she's
pretty
still
sure she'll be alone, and lonely.
Oh, Germany's only about a 3 to 4 hour flight away from me. Dangerous.
Well, you're going to have to take that bullet, mate, because my love for Timmy is so great that no woman
I'm sure he'll
ever...
probably buy me a beer at the end and encourage a threesome in some way, but maybe not.
Give you some pointers.
He probably would. Show me how to swing it.
Lift your leg.
Exactly. No, Timmy's in it to win it. I think he's going to have a great time this weekend.
Yeah, and he might be one that I reckon, I mean, given how many reps he gets, he might take something different. Because I remember chatting to him. Mm. He loves Obulus. He's got probably the most reps with that. But he also spoke quite highly of a few other guilds when we chatted to him. So I wonder, you know, if we are talking in the conversation of who will come to try to take something to beat the meta, you know, the Obulus meta, he might be one that'll do that. So, Not sure.
I think even if he takes Obulus and Scalpel, Scalpel's a weapon, man. Like, she is so underrated. And it gives him, like, a good switch-up style against faster teams as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I don't mind facing Scalpel. Scalpel's very good.
Love her. So Australia was after Germany. Yeah.
Yep.
So, man, the myth, the chin.
Big Deno.
Big Deno. Big steam shovel chin.
Yeah, yeah. He, yeah, well, look, I mean, Dave and I have both played him, and I think, you know, his reputation does precede him. He is a bit of a weapon. Mm-hmm. I reckon he probably hasn't had as much practice as he usually had, and he even admitted that, but I reckon any time he gets a couple of games in, and I think he's playing the team tournament on the weekend as well, he just hits a zone where he doesn't look at his cards, he knows exactly what you're about to do before you do it, and it's just whether he can basically outposition you. So
nice. So he played the, he won his title with the Union, I think, did he?
He did. He played Blackheart Union, and yeah, I don't think he got below maybe 25 minutes on his clock in any game. yeah. Yeah, so
dude,
he's
a freak. He's a freak.
Yeah, he's great. Great bloke. Good fun to play. I don't know who he'll take. You know, whether he'll take the. I doubt he'll take Obulus. Whether he just sticks with what he knows, I don't know.
He's throwing up Union, Butchers, Fish, Morts, and there was one other guild that he mentioned, but I doubt he'll play Morts.
I mean, Butchers is his wheelhouse, isn't it? Yeah, that's where it started. So, you know, I'm guessing.
Again, you've got like another good two captain option there, like Fillet and Ox.
Yeah. They're the one that benefit. I think Butchers are one of the ones that benefit the most from the two captain. Maybe them and Brewers, but you know, they've got ones that are so polarized that they really benefit from having two captains in their roster. Definitely.
Yeah, and if you take something that's squishy against, you know, and he drops Fillet into you, like, you know, Avarice Greed comes on the tape, Greed's just gone. See you later. So
exactly.
Yep. Season two Fillet is ridiculous.
Yeah. It's almost behind us, don't worry.
Yeah, we're nearly there. Just keep moving.
Come on.
Yes. So who we get next? Ed Ball, I think it was.
Ed Ball.
Ed Ball. From politics to Guild Ball. Ed Ball, yeah. Now, this is a guy I've not personally played myself, but he seems to have crawled his way to the top. There was a 5-round event, the British Championships, and he claimed it with, yet again, Morticians.
Yep.
Bobby, man. Bobby.
Yeah, I wonder if he's going to stick to what he knows and go with Morticians for the final one as well. It would be funny if everybody just turned out with identical lists, but.
Well, you're almost playing chess at that point. I mean, that would be a raw test of skill in some ways.
Yeah, that's true. But then, in those circumstances, you know, bad dice roll is what's going to make a difference, possibly, or. Yeah, it's hard to say.
That's a fair point. I do remember. So we chatted to Jamie P about that tournament, and I was messaging him at the time, and he basically said, "I reckon Ed Ball will, you know, probably take it out." And this was only like round two or three at this point. He cited that it was his ability to not give up points to the opposition, and this is a pretty interesting point that, you know, often I'll throw a guy in, get a goal, knowing you're going to lose him. And it was his ability to basically, you know, negate the giving up points but still scoring points, which indicates a pretty high level of gaming, I would say.
Yeah. I quite like how in the new, I know we're talking season two at the moment, but the new season three organized play, they've moved over to victory points differential. So rather than points scored and points against, they've moved over to actual differential for the tiebreaker, which I think is kind of in the right way. Yeah, I hope I've got that right, unless I've read it completely wrong, but that's how I read it.
That should make it
it brings it in line with a lot of other gaming systems where that's sort of the norm, and I think, you know, people will probably have been a bit salty if they've denied their opponent points, but maybe they've had one game where they've tanked and they're not hit enough. So I don't know. We'll see if it actually makes a difference or not.
Yeah, it's a subtle change, I guess, yeah. You can only really just map out past tournaments and see who would have got what result based on just doing that slightly different system. But, yeah.
Yeah.
I still, at the end of the day, you've still got to beat everyone to win. The one that always bugs me was, I reckon if you make it to the final table, that you know, if you lose that final game, you should still actually just get second, irrespective, because you can only ever play the people that are put in front of you.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the one that's always bugged me, and it's not just in Guild Ball, but in in War Machine as well. I know that where people have got to the final, lost, and then finished fourth, like missed the podium.
So that's the mode, isn't it? When you get through to a final and you know, you're not in the top two at the end, but then again, it just goes down to the win draw loss system that we've got for Guild Ball. Yeah.
So Ed Paul. No worries. The last one of the ones we know then is a man that you know that you've played against. Yes, so Henry Kay.
Henry Kay, yeah. Now Henry, I've got great respect for. He's a really good player. He knows his shit, and he's got the balls to take. I wouldn't say Butchers are subpar, but I would say that there might not be the flavour of the month, at least when it comes to dominating the Guild Ball Championships and whatnot. So I'm glad he took it out with something other than Obulus.
Yeah, it's interesting he said that too, that he thought, you know what, I'm going to do it with something else, or take something else at least.
Or in fact, really, he took it out with Princess, because Princess got the final... the final jab in there, and she's got the final point. I don't think I would have let him walk out of there if he didn't finish that game with Princess the way it was going.
It's entirely reasonable. And you know, thank you for contributing to the fabric of the community in that respect, Pash. You're a
gentleman. That's what I do. I take one for the team, you know.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it was a big one to take, mate, and you made it. So well done.
I've had bigger. Yes. All right, so that's our six names. That's our six guys. Now, we've got two more spots to fill. They're last-minuters. They're a bit of a dark horse. What do you think about these last-minute guys filling in the spot?
Well, I think Steve Newton has to be thrown in there if he's playing.
Yep. I mean, ranked number one at the moment. Again, Morticians is his forte, but he can play plenty of other things as well. So, I mean, if he's there, he's in the runnings, I would say.
Tobias Ford from Queensland is heading over as well, and he took out second at Australian Nationals. Plays engineers, and he's a lovely bloke and an awesome player. Yeah.
I played him. We did a warm up game, and it wasn't much of a warm up. I don't think he got out of second gear. He's knows what he's doing and quite methodical about it. And when we talk about players that'll potentially don't give up many points, but take your points away from you, he does that really well. So I reckon he's a chance. I mean, the big thing is, okay, you've got a bunch of guys obviously going over there, and probably a heap more from the UK. Do you think someone who gets on a roll, gets through the qualifier, will have that confidence and their game's just in a good place to then smash through to get to that final table?
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible. I think for a lot of these places, I think the last chance qualifiers might be more hard fought for than some of the other championships. I mean, not to take away from any of the details here, but I would expect there's going to be a really good turnout this weekend.
Yes,
absolutely. There's going to be, there's going to be people that are wanting to win. They are, they're there to win. They've brought their A game. So I think it's going to be hard, and whoever comes out on top of that pile has to be in contention for one of these top spots, I think.
Yeah, I guess you got to throw fatigue in at that point though. But
yeah, possibly.
I think if you've fought your way through a qualifier, you can make an argument that probably you're in a good mental state to be able to just roll out your team in the way that you have in the past, however many games you played to get there.
Yeah. I mean, what would it be, 4 or 5, and then the Worlds with 8 players would be a 3-round then, I'm assuming. So.
I think it will. I had a quick look at the schedule. The timer looked like it was a 3-round event. I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and that's the other argument. You look at it the flip side, that you've got some of these guys. I'm assuming you've been given a free ticket, you're going to play other stuff in the tournament, the weekend. But some of them might rock up and only get a couple of games and then go to play Worlds. So you could argue that they might be rusty. But given that if you've won a trip to the other side of the world to play in a tournament, I'm guessing you would have got your reps up at home and played as many games as you could. So.
Exactly. I mean, I think given the fact that some of these guys will have played hundreds and hundreds of games with their chosen team, I would imagine that one or two games less during the weekend isn't going to dent their performance much.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my biggest frustration is that, like, I can't get there. So,
yeah.
Not that yeah. I think I'd be in with a chance, but, eh.
Well, you never know. Somebody else could fall ill, and you could, I don't know, you could just sneak in there somehow.
Well, half the battle was just been there, right?
Well, that's it, exactly, yeah.
Miss 100% of the shots you don't take, something.
Yes.
Exactly, or 90%
of the four dice shots that you take, I don't know. Yeah. That's just me, though.
Any UK players that you think are worth noting, Pash?
It depends who's going there. I mean, I actually don't know who's going to be at these last events, but a name that springs to my mind is Pat Vance.
Yes.
Pat was a guy that I've played before. Yeah, I mean, he's I've played against him in a game, and it was, you know, like you say, very methodical and knows exactly how to get from A to win in as few steps as possible. So I think he's probably one to consider. You know what, actually, I think would be quite fun is if Steve Newton's son was there, Jack, little Jack. A bit of a father and son combo, that would be kind of fun. And then, you know, seeing them be in the top tables, that would be quite I think that would be quite a show.
Geez, that'd be awesome if a kid took it out. That'd be fantastic,
wouldn't it? That would be brilliant. But then, what would that say about the game? I think that would only be a positive.
The meta would explode at that point.
Yuck.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess obviously there's a lot of Obulus. Do you straight up think it's going to be an Obulus that wins it, or you know, given there aren't a huge amount of counters to Obulus, do you think something else could come over it? And let's say half the field is Obulus, right? So let's say four of the eight. It's
yeah. But well, I think Obulus in the final is a good safe bet. If that was on there, I'd put my money on Obulus in the final. At least one team.
Do you think people will have practiced the Obulus matchup and will be actively teching against it, though? I mean, I wonder whether the meta's shifted. You know, I think it's case
possible.
Of, you know, has the meta shifted enough? Do people have a deep enough understanding of Obulus to play against him? Or, you know, will that kind of raw power that you tend to see from Obulus just win out, like in the hands of a good player? I think that's the real question.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I find Mortician's one of these teams that are really funny. They've got such a steep learning curve that, you know, if you're picking up Mortician's thinking they're going to be easy to win with, they're not. There's so many, you know, normal to average players that have played them and just struggle with them. I think it takes a lot of thought, a lot of skill, a lot of play time in order to get the most out of them. And I think it's really the top sort of 5% of players that play Morticians that can really get the most out of them, and that's what we hear about. So I don't know. I wouldn't be playing them personally. They're just not for me. But all hats to them.
Do you think like Fillet's a good counter, and that potentially is a something we could see? I mean, that would be my money that it'll be a Fillet Obulus or an Obulus Obulus final.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is that Fillet has the ability to pick off a couple of the small, or, you know, light on wound models like Dirge and Greed, which then kills the skew of the extra activation. And so then it becomes a mind game of whether you take Avarice and Greed.
Yeah, I mean, Fillet is one. You'd have to consider Shank in the same team. I mean, they've got tons of players that can just run in and then take off those last couple of wounds and then just chip them off. So I think... Yeah, Butchers are a good counter, and Butchers are not a weak team. They do everything you want to do, you know. They score goals, and then they take people out. So I think Butchers are in contention as well.
Absolutely.
Brisket is also a strong play into Morticians, given how few female players they have.
Yeah.
5-1 unpredictable. Pretty solid on a goal.
And they're not taking Cossett into you, you know, because that's just...
Yeah. I like how flexible Butchers are. You know, they can play a 2-2 game or a 3-0 game or a, you know, 6-takeout game. Just whatever is on the table.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's say, what teams do you think we're not going to see and why?
Hunters.
Yeah,
definitely not Hunters. Probably not Alchemists, even though I love them. So probably, I reckon there'll be, four Obulus, a couple of Butchers, maybe an Engineers, and who else? Maybe a Brewer or a Mason, something like that in there would be my guess.
Union.
Okay. You don't fancy the Union? Yeah.
I think Union is strong.
But yeah, I guess it just depends on what people are comfortable with as well. So.
Yeah, definitely. I think the Hunters is probably a solid guess. It's the, I just don't think they're quite on par at the moment to be able to compete with the rest. I think we are probably not going to see Alchemists and probably not going to see Masons. I think, I don't know why, I just, I personally, we find Masons, we have tons of Masons players in Scotland, and they seem to be doing really well. They're really good players as well, so that sort of helps. And I think Masons are sort of the stealth filth of the Guild Ball world, but there's so many other things that you can, you know, you can bring in that can do pain to them. So I think Masons probably might not be able to see. We're going to see Morticians. That's, I mean, there's going to be at least two Morticians, maybe three, maybe four. Butchers, I think, are for sure, and I think Union are for sure as well. The rest are sort of up in the air.
I think that's right. Yeah, I feel like Union actually plays pretty well into just about everything. You know, they've got a really flexible roster. And Blackheart is an amazing captain.
Yeah, and well, to be fair, I mean, they're probably another one that benefit quite well from the two-captain one. Mm-hmm. You know, when you can play Rage against your Obeluses and whatnot. I mean, they've got a lot of tech that goes around, you know, Ghast and other players as well. And I think Blackheart, just complete utility. You know, Jackknife, he can do anything you want him to do. I think they're more killy than Butchers, and I think they can probably do the damage on Morticians as well. So I think that's a solid contender.
Yes, yeah. And I know Trent likes to play Union, and he does it very well. So, you know, in the hands of somebody like that, having that sort of toolbox option is very strong.
Yeah, I think so. But wouldn't it be funny if Ballista won? I mean, look at that.
That'd be amazing.
If that was the case.
That'd be awesome. So good.
The guy that I think has had the least appreciation in season two, I think that would be his comeuppance, as if he in fact won the championship. So I think that'd be fun.
See, I can see Jordan doing that just to prove a point. I feel like that would fit with what we know about him.
Well, he even admitted plays them better than he plays Morticians. He thinks he plays them better than he plays Morticians. So, you know, and they did a little cast on, you know, how good Ballista is. I reckon he is good. It's just, it's in the hands of a good player. You know, that's when you'll see it.
The only downside to Ballista is, you know, if your dice go bad on character plays, that can really put you in an awkward spot. So, you know, if it's about minimizing that random bad luck, somebody like Obulus is better. But, you know, if you're going out to show the world that they're wrong, then, you know, Ballista, great choice.
Yeah. All right, okay, so what is your top two players in the final standings, and why?
I don't think you can go past Jordan Knack, given he's come through probably a longer field or a bigger field. So I reckon he'll be in the top. And I'm going to go our boy Tim Wisniewski. Is that right? I'm going to fuck
everything. Yeah, Wisniewski.
He's a champ. I reckon that will speak volumes of reps. And I reckon he just has that many reps. If he doesn't get too drunk, but maybe has one or two beers, he's just an absolute weapon. Like, I reckon he'll just dissect people. So.
Yeah, I think nice. I think the final, I see three players. So Jordan, obviously, because of all the reasons that have already been given. Tim and Trent. I think they strike me as the three standout players. I don't know enough about Ed. I don't know enough about Henry. But, you know, I think there's enough, like, high-level, I guess, stuff on the record from those guys that I just feel that... Having spoken to these guys as well, like, you get a sense of how they think and how they approach the game. And having played Trent, he's fucking terrifying. Like, there's just, like, it's next level stuff. Like, he's on a different level to somebody like me, who, you know, can play the game at an okay level, but, you know, he sees shit that I don't see. He's four moves ahead. So you look at somebody like that, and I think it would be hard to not put them in contention.
Yeah, fair point. I mean, my only argument, not against Trent, but I'm just not sure, you know, how many reps he's had recently. I think, like I said, if he gets a few games in the team tournament and that, and gets his shit together, I reckon he'll be, you know, pretty hard to beat. But he'll even admit that he hasn't had probably as many games. I mean, it's harder over here. Like, his meta's probably one of the biggest ones in Australia, but it's still not huge. We're all kind of growing our metas, so it's hard to get those high-level games all the time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Whereas somebody like Tim is just like sledgehammering it, and Jordan's obviously been preparing pretty consistently. You know, took out Fall Brawl, took out Gen Con. I know he and Alex and Pat basically locked themselves in an underground bunker and just played Guild Ball until, you know, they collapsed. So
Yeah. I mean, that's what you need, really. I think if you're playing at this level, is you need to find two or three mates who are willing to, you know, who are on the same sort of mentality as you. They want to play competitively. They want to play as best as they can. And then you just, you get the reps, and then you just, like you say, you can lock yourself away for a weekend or a week or whatever long you got, and just play it out and then just basically try and increase the level of all of you guys at the same time.
Absolutely. So, I mean, even comments they had, I remember listening to something they were saying where they would play a game and then they'd swap sides and play the exact same matchup from the opposite side. Like, yeah. You know, looking at the game that way is, yeah, probably next level kind of tech. So. Yeah.
Have you guys ever tried that? Have you done a mirror match and then just swapped over and played the same game again?
No, we haven't. We've possibly played similar teams into each other, like, you know, the Hunters, and then reversed it. But no, I don't think we've, because I've never played Morticians, and Dave's Morticians, Butchers, those kinds of things, so no.
I think, I've only ever done it a couple of times. And actually, you find it really interesting. I think you get the sense that, oh, you know, this is really annoying, that is bent, because, you know, that works all the time. And then you try and play that combo out, and then you realize, well, actually, no, that takes a lot of setup. You need all of these X, Y, and Z to go right before you can land home this, you know, one in 100 sort of sweet spot where you can get all of it paying off. So
yeah, Scything Blow killing models, kind of, you know.
Yeah, stuff. Yeah, exactly. You know, Scything Blow getting you 8 points or one activation or whatever else. I think it takes a bit of thought, and I think... I would recommend to anybody who's keen on doing, you know, getting a little bit better at their game or getting better against other players and other teams is to do that, you know, swap over where you play your opponent's team straight after the game and see if the results are any different.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea.
So one thing we have done to sort of, you know, improve our respective understanding of different teams is I've started picking up teams that Campbell's traditionally played. And you do see that, you know, you think like, okay, well, I'll play Corsair. He looks pretty easy to roll out. Actually, it's not that easy, you know, and you start to, I think getting that different perspective, you know, it's one thing to read cards and watch games. It's another thing to play and see how all the pieces work.
It's also the game style. I mean, basically, when we came to the game, you were more on the killy side, and I was more on the goal-scoring side. And I think we both have slowly gained an appreciation for the opposite side of the game as well. Yeah, and obviously meeting in the middle, but, you know, you get to a point where you know you need to have options to be able to do both. And of course, there's a great example where you can have a team that can basically go all the way, either way, if you need it to. But I remember you saying the other day about, you know, playing more goal scoring and getting a better appreciation for how good, if you can get two goals in a turn, that, you know, the game's just about over.
Yeah, you're up on tempo. But I mean, it's a different proposition again to almost approach it like a chess puzzle, where you know, you take the pieces, you set them back up, and you work through the different variations. Yeah, and you know, like, say what you will, but like, there's a lot to be said for that analytical approach. Even though to some people it might seem boring, but there's a lot to be said for that analytical approach to, you know, mapping out possibilities and then optimizing your choices.
Yeah.
No, definitely. I think problem solving is a key skill in this game. And you need to see, you need to get as much practice at it as you can.
That's part of the lure, though, I guess, of the game. You know, we're all gamers and, you know, like a good puzzle. I think that's part of the lure that gets people going, is you have a game where you're like, oh, if I just did this or that, and you start to, like, work through it, and that gets you addicted to want to come back again.
It's good. It's got that level of complexity that, you know, it's just trying to figure out which one is the best answer and trying to do all that quickly while on a clock and under pressure and all the rest.
That's a real skill.
Then, you know, taking into consideration, obviously, chance and probability and all the rest. There's a lot of things to... a lot of balls to juggle. Yeah, you've got to keep your hands on your balls.
Yeah. You crazy guy. Yeah, I don't know. I was playing some Infinity yesterday, and I'm still learning the game. And I sort of ran through a half point, 150 point game in about 25 minutes. And at the end, I thought to myself, "Is that it? This feels like hide and seek with guns." Now, I might be missing something about the game there, and I probably am. But compared to the cleanness of Guild Ball, like, you've got a very clean rule set that offers you complex choices, like deep gameplay, but is very easy to sort of get into and play straight away. And I think it's ruined me for other games, actually.
Yeah, it's an easy selling point. Like, I mean, I'm a pundit here as well, so I do demo games and all the rest. So one of the things I do enjoy about the game is you go to somebody new and you go, right, you're interested in Guild Ball. Okay, go on the Steamforge website, have a look at the teams, pick whichever one you like the look of best. That team will work. Some of them might, the learning curve might be steeper. You might have to try a few different things. It'll be trial and error. But whatever team you pick, there will be a combination that works for you. And you know, that's something you don't get in all other games. Like, we've all played a game system where, a newbie comes along. He picked this, thousand goblin army, which he's taken, 3 months to paint of staying up all night, and then he brings it along and just gets destroyed left, right, and center in every single game and just has a terrible time. Yeah. But Guild Ball doesn't have that. I think that's a strong point for it. It shows that they've thought it out when they were creating it, and sort of kudos to them for making it a decent game.
Yeah,
exactly. No bad captains. You can't put a bad captain on the pitch. No matter who you put down, you've got a game.
Also, I think it shows that they're confident. They're confident in their game, in that they go, here are the rules, here are the paper dolls, here's everything you need to play without actually having to spend a cent beyond, like, paper, and printing. We're so confident that you will like this game that, you'll want to go and buy miniatures and accessories and whatever. And, it totally bears out. Like, that, I really love the generosity of spirit that Steamforged have with their game. Put it out there. Yeah. If you want to buy in, you buy in.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? There's a funny story, actually. I went to a job interview in GW many, many years ago when I was a student, and it was one of these group gangbang jobs where they just shove you all in a room and they try and weed out the people who are a bit shit. I'm sure you've all been through something like that before. I'm sure there's a technical name for it, but let's be honest, that's exactly what it is.
Well, that's exactly how I got adopted, mate.
Well, that's it. Just pick the ugliest kid and go with that. Less chances of getting kidnapped. But it was one of the things that came up in that group job is there was one guy that said, we were all coming up with ideas of how, what's the next innovative game thing to do. And one guy said, well, I think it would be brilliant if the game rules were available for free online. And, there was a silence in the room and we basically laughed him out of the room because, how are we going to make money by giving away rules? And that's just less than 10 years ago, I'd imagine. Now you look at, the Steamforged and other game systems that do that. And it's like you say, they're so confident in that the product is good that they don't need to make money off rule books, really. Mm. You'll buy into it because it's a good game, not because the pictures are shiny and pretty.
Yeah, it's almost like that. If you know your product's good, you're not going to hide behind, well, you've got to buy and see if it is.
Yeah, you have to spend X amount to get into it before you even know if it's any good or not. This takes that away. And I think this kickoff that's coming out next weekend or whatever it is, I think it's next weekend, I think it's going to be phenomenal. I think it's going to sell like hotcakes because people will just be buying it. And I mean, it looks like a board game, but we recognize it as a miniatures game. Other people might think, this has got everything I need in it. And I think that's brilliant. I can't wait to get my hands on one. I really want to have a look at the stuff. I think it'll be totally brilliant.
It's some of the smartest marketing I've seen from a game company in a long time.
Yeah, they've done their research. They've done their homework, the boys. They've done their homework.
Yeah, hopefully, I'm really hoping that we see an uptick of local players around Christmas time.
Yeah.
I think there'll be about a 2-month lag.
Yeah. I mean, it would be nice, wouldn't it? Because that's what we want, is more people to play against, bigger events. Oh, yeah. More things. All right, okay, so here's a question for you now. So we are in what we are at the moment. We've got a world championship with 8 players at it. Where do you see this being next year? bigger, smaller? Is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Are we all going to be playing Dark Souls? What's going to happen?
I can't see, given how good the game is and how clever Steamforged have been about, you know, like, I think it's fair to say that Season 2 was a bit distracted, but I think it was distracted for some very good reasons, and those reasons have allowed the company to, I guess, consolidate their operations and build for the future. And I think, you know, if we don't see a bigger SteamCon next year or a bigger Worlds event next year, they will have done something catastrophic. And given how smart those guys are, I find that hard to believe. I can't see that eventuating.
Yeah, I would guess that the world final will probably be the same. It'll be, you know, eight. Just given some of the national ones could have had a few more people to them. I reckon next year the national ones, because of they'll have heard of what's happened and, you know, the world will get there, that they'll be a lot bigger. So you'll get a lot more, you know, cream rising to the top. You'll get a higher player quality, and it'll probably still be an eight-man tournament, I'm guessing, with a couple of last-chance qualifiers.
I think you're right. I mean, that was basically my thinking for next year before I went in to try and grab a spot at the Irish event, because I thought this is going to be my easiest way of trying to get in, because I know next year this is going to be so much bigger. There's going to be so many more people that, you know, these spots are going to be hard-fought for, and it's going to be tough. But at the same time, I think it's only going to get better and bigger, and I really can't wait to see what happens with it. I think it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely, you know, booking in to go up and play our national one again. It was such a good event, you know, let alone, you know, the disappointment of not finishing in the top couple. It was so good to be part of that kind of event, so...
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be interesting to see how it grows and where it goes from here. It will grow. It definitely will, because it's got all the sort of foundations for it. So I can't wait to see what it's going to be like in 6 months' time, 12 months' time, whatever. So we'll definitely be here. We'll still be doing our thing.
So what's your take on Season 3, Pash? Like, because there's been a little bit of divided opinion on forums and whatnot. You know, you've got some people who are saying, oh, how dare they go and rebalance the rules and force me to relearn the game.
Yeah.
And some people who are like, no, this is absolutely the right thing to do. Let's take a good game and make it great. Let's tighten these rules up. Like, where do you sit?
To be honest, I try not to read into those threads on the forum. There's nothing but arguments and disappointment there. So I just go there for the events and the painting. That's me. In my opinion, I think looking at what they have spoiled for Season 3, like what they've sort of let us see, And all the things I sort of hear in the background there, I think it's going to be a good thing, because all the things seem to be improvements. There hasn't been anything that I've seen where it's like, oh, that's a bit of a gamble. Is that going to be good? I guess I'll try it and see. I think everything that's come out so far seems to be really positive and makes me excited for the game, which is exactly what it's intending to do. So, I can't wait till next week where we've got access to all of these PDFs and whatever, and we can actually go and have a look. I can see me getting zero work done next Monday. I think I'm just going to be sitting there furiously scrolling away and, you know, just not getting anything done at all, and just having a look and see about all these different combos. And it's almost like next week is Christmas Day. You've had an idea what's coming in for Christmas. You've wrote your list to Santa. He's got a few surprises for you there. You just can't wait to see what's in that box. I think it's exciting. I can't wait.
Oh, absolutely. It's just when you've seen some of it too, it's just, you know, you see things they're doing. I mean, for me, the indication is that the game's going to go a little bit more towards the scoring. So I just, because that's, you know, that's the fun bit that gets people going when they see the ball pinging around. So I reckon everything will shift slightly that way, but it's just going to be for the better, and it's so much fun to play.
Can't wait.
Well, Pash, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate I think we both appreciate you staying up so late to talk to us.
It's been a complete pleasure. Definitely. Man. Thank you very much for inviting me on, and the check's in the mail. Thanks.
Well, I feel that given your natural radio presence, we may have to make this a semi-permanent thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my girlfriend's going to love me staying up on school nights for these sort of things, but fuck it, she's in bed already, she can't hear this, so it's fine.
We've had some advice from Trent's fiance Toya. We know how to write letters now, so we'll draft a letter, get it to her, get the permissions in place, and we'll see what happens.
Oh, that'd be brilliant. You know you're going to have to send that snail mail, so it's got that Australian stamp on it. I'll tell her it has to go through customs, and, you know, there's people crying out in the community, and they have to... They
we're
going to
get a homing pigeon, actually. We're going to send a homing pigeon. I just thought that was the safest way to
go. Oh, that'd be brilliant. Yeah, yeah, then I can cook it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, dear.
Brilliant.
That'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
All right, lads. Well, thank you very much. We'll catch you another time. All right?
No worries, mate. We'll talk soon.
Too easy.
See ya.
Cheers, Bash.
Cheers.
And welcome back. That was a pretty solid episode, what do you reckon, Dave? Did you enjoy some of those new tidbits of, you know, rookie information?
I did. I did, Campbell. I'm thirsty for knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and look, you know, with the up-and-coming launch of Season 3, it's only going to get better for people that want to just, you know, read more, learn more. It's Gilball Christmas next week, basically.
It is. I'm so excited. Yeah.
Fantastic. So, yeah, no, I can't wait for that. I would say to anyone that is keen to see what's going on, jump on Twitter feeds. Pretty much anyone who's going to be there is going to be tweeting stuff. I'm sure Jamie P will, plus a whole bunch of other guys like Big Dano and those guys will be tweeting cards, you know, spoilers and that kind of thing. I think also they've got a Twitch stream. We'll dig that out and put it in the show notes so you can follow along and watch some of the, you know, the games live, which is actually what I'm really looking forward to doing.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So it should be pretty awesome.
I mean, it's not as good as being there, obviously, and I'm a bit sad, but, you know, they've done really well to make, I guess, the convention as available as possible to people who can't get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So barring, you know, paying for every single person who's ever bought them, you know, a model to fly over there, they've done pretty well.
Yeah, well, I think you're lining up some limited edition stuff to be brought back, aren't you?
Hopefully. Poor Tim White, our pundit, he's a legend. He's taking some stuff over to trade and give to some of the national champs that I hadn't sent any stubby holders to yet. So he's doing that, and hopefully he's going to pick up some limited edition Mist and maybe Avarice and Greed if you can, which would be awesome.
I want that Rage, man. I want that Rage.
It looks so sweet, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. So have you got some shout-outs, Cam?
I do indeed. I actually, I mean, a first quick one is to our mate Jared McGraw. We've been playing a little bit of Vassal with him. He's an absolute legend. I've had two or three games with him in the last week or so. Mm-hmm. So he's great for a game. I also shout out to Michael, one of our local pundits. He hasn't, you know, been able to make it to the club, but he's definitely been there, pardon me, on Vassal, and he's always keen for a game. So those two. I've also been asked by Matt Graham, about the Capital Cup. I've been in touch with him. So this is a shout out for the CanCon tournament that's going to be happening on Saturday the 28th of January in Canberra. It's part of CanCon. It's going to be a great Gilball tournament, so look up Capital Cup and get on down there.
And we have to give a shout out to Pasha's event, the Caledonian Christmas Cup, 4th of December at Common Ground Games in Stirling. There are some amazing prizes for that one. Like, there's a kickoff box set being raffled off, limited edition models, Farmers Guild patch. So Steamforged have gone all out to support that event, and it sounds like a good one.
It sounds like Pasha does a lot of work up there, so he, you know, deserves all the, you know, kudos that he gets too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sad I can't get to the UK and play.
Maybe we're just living in the wrong country, you know. We've been exiled.
Yeah, yeah.
Convicts we are.
I don't know, man. Like, the perpetual night that occurs at this time of the year seems like a bad thing, but yeah.
Six shifts.
Swings and roundabouts.
Mm.
Yeah. I also want to give a shout-out to Alex Botts because, you know, that guy loves bananas, and bananas are close to my heart.
We might just make him a limited edition one stubby holder with a banana on it. So yeah,
that'd be great. I don't know that he would know what to do with it. I feel like it might confuse him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But you know, it'd need to have a smiley face and some teeth in it. I don't know.
Just like Alex.
So is that number nine? Nine and done now, mate.
Yeah, nine and done. And yeah, I'm really happy that episode 10 coincides with the episode after Worlds. Like, yeah. I'm super excited about that. Episode 10, man. Double digits.
Double digits for the double dodge. Nice. It'll be good, and we'll hopefully try to get on whoever wins it. Obviously, some people have interview contracts with other networks, so we might not be able to, but we'll definitely get someone on who's there and witnessing it, and seeing what kind of happened and how it all went down.
Yeah, and good luck to all of those guys that are playing in Worlds, particularly the dudes that we've talked to. Big shout out to Tim Wisniewski. I fucking love that dude. What a champ.
Yeah. I also want to point out, I mean, we did talk about, you know, odds of people winning. Jordan Murphy, he was a really nice guy. We chatted ages ago. All the best luck to him. I reckon, you know, he could be a bit of a dark horse too, just given that no one's really, you know, looked at him that much, and he's had a long time to prepare. So, yeah, it could be an interesting one.
And we know Trenton doesn't listen to this podcast because, you know, he
thinks we're shit blokes.
He thinks we're shit blokes, but, good luck to him as well. Like, he's gone a long way, and... you know, you got to back your own country. So
yeah, absolutely.
All right.
See, on that note, that was another episode of Double Dodge.
Freaking bear.